Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 35. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson, coming to us from a depressed... Are you in Tulsa today? But it's not a great week for Hog Nation after their performance against Butler.
What a shitty end to, you know, a very long career for Macon, Barford. We know Gafford's leaving. We had seven seniors. No effort. I mean, it's just impossible to watch some of these teams come out with max effort. I mean, you watch a team like UMBC play, and then you look at our seniors and, like, a guy who's trying to make the NBA and just the effort level to just stand there and watch Butler run by. It's just, it's depressing to see a team like that.
Well, Butler, again, is just the most – I think I said since 2005 they're 21-5 and 2 against the spread, and then they cover twice more. This past weekend, one was really fortunate if you bet them against Purdue. But, yeah, I mean, to come out and go down 21-2 – before, you know, you could even grab a beer. And then, you know, what was the closest they got after that?
No, they took the lead. Like, I
they
know
took the lead?
They got up by, I think, two.
Okay, I don't remember seeing them. Jeez.
Yeah, they went on an amazing run. They actually took the lead. I know that you were trying to live bet them, but the window that you had was like 30 seconds. And it wasn't even a TV timeout, so... They did get the lead. I doubt it was ever past Butler. You know, I never doubt it was past Butler pick. But, you know, the Hogs came all the way back from that and then just went right back into, you know, mannequin mode where they play zero defense whatsoever. It's one of the most frustrating teams I've had to watch the entire year. I'm actually looking forward to some of the fresh, fastest 40 minutes of hell come in next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that makes you feel better because I was legit – waiting for them to go, you know, to be a dog live. So, you know, if it was just for like a split second, I'd feel a little better then because I must have been not paying attention when they briefly took a lead. But let's what we'll do today on today's podcast is it shouldn't be too long. We'll recap a pretty crazy weekend. I mean, we have 16 seed winning. We have tons of betting mooses and crazy finishes. So we'll recap our best and worst there. And then, you know, we'll just go through a wild bracket and then, a high level, you know, Sweet 16 overview, some things that we like, futures. And then later in the week, we'll try and get maybe a more concrete, we'll get a more concrete Sweet 16 preview up in addition to maybe some baseball stuff. So we have a couple people in mind for that. I mean, it's crazy that baseball opening day, it's the earliest it's ever going to be this year. It starts on the 28th.
29th, Thursday. Yeah, and I still don't understand why they have these. I don't understand why the first 2 weeks of April when they start the season, why they have games in the north. I mean, shouldn't all games be in Miami or Houston or San Diego? Like, I don't understand why they do this because it's just miserable. Opening day is miserable at 30 degrees.
Well, I also think that they keep trying to push this early. Like, I need a break, man. Like, come on. I mean, I'm trying to do all this college basketball stuff, and then baseball is going to creep up on me. But yeah, I mean, I think that I like when there is an actual opening day, a real opening day, which they are going to have. I think all the teams are going to play on the opening day this year. But I like when it's like, hey, college basketball national championship is over on a Monday night, and then opening day, I want that on like Tuesday. But you know, so now this year it's on March 29th, and you know, that's next Thursday, and then you know, that's right when you know, then you still have the Elite Eight and the Final Four, and like, I mean, just push it back 5 days. Come on. So, in addition
to your two Final Four plays, you're going to have 15 unders on baseball games taking place in the North.
I know. I might just boycott it until Tuesday, but I mean, I probably won't. But I say that. So yeah, we'll try and get some baseball stuff up.
Unless Mike Leake is on the road, right? That's an auto play.
Fair. So Yeah, we're going to get some baseball stuff going. I mean, I love baseball. I'll be grinding through the whole year. I usually take, like, you know, a couple weeks in August off, and I like to try and, like, breathe for a week in April, but we'll see. But anyway, let's get back to the tournament. Let's start with our – let's just go through region by region first. So the craziest region, and I'm here in Lexington, and it's just – there's just jokes all over. Like, hey, thanks, committee. We knew you did us a solid, and we have no complaints. After all the complaints and you know, looking at Kentucky's road, all of a sudden they can get to the final four. I mean, they realistically get to the national championship without facing a top eight seed. I mean, they could go. I mean, they open minus six every game. You're supposed to get like harder, and your lines are supposed to come down. But they open minus six in the first round, minus six in the second round, minus six in the third round. So it's crazy. They're the favorite to get to the final four now, obviously, in that region, as the five seed. And the South is just, you know, it's blown up. I mean, I think, you know, that Kentucky's going to beat Kansas State. And I think Loyola Chicago is actually going to beat Nevada. And I actually think Loyola Chicago can give Kentucky a game. And Loyola Chicago could make the final four. But I ultimately think Kentucky's going to come out of there. But I'm done predicting things happening in that region besides against the spread.
The region is crazy. It started off with, and I almost forgot that Davidson covered the spread on some crazy-ass circus shit, because there's been so much of that going on in all the other games. It's buried in my mind that happened so long ago. But, that, I mean, it even started off with Davidson getting the cover. Well, depending on what number you got. So I was the first one to get in line for the Davidson plus six, and then I had buddies all over me saying, what should I do now? And I'm like, I don't know. To tell you the truth, I kind of like 4.5 on Kentucky, and it lands right on five. So that was – you know, I think Big Cat sent out that tweet. He's like, there's some guy out there that's got plus six on Davidson and got minus 4.5 on UK, and I hate him. And, you know, it's like, well, that's kind of the group that we kind of roll with, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got six early, and I was in a bar in Lexington, and I hear this guy say, all right, I got a shot now after Davidson hit a three to cut it to – they cut it to six, and then – they fouled, and then I went over and said, I was about to say, you need Davidson? Because this isn't a bar in Lexington. I was surprised that someone else bet Davidson. And it turns out that I met him before, and through Big Cat in Chicago, and he was visiting, and I met him before, but I mean, this was years ago. He didn't look familiar right away. He looked kind of familiar, but I just said, all right, I've probably seen him out at the bars before. He was actually following me on the pick, and then we sat there and watched Davidson hit that insane three, and then we went crazy and just bought a bunch of shots. So it was actually a really, really funny encounter. But yeah, that was crazy. Seton Hall was crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
that was awesome to get that cover. Those are probably my two favorite covers. That Seton Hall also, that under got moose, but that shot also covered Seton Hall for the second half. First half, Seton Hall actually got moosed by Kansas. They missed two free throws, and Kansas hit a three. The worst one that I had, and I had a pretty good weekend, but the worst beat that I had, you know, because I was fortunate on those two games, and I had more winners than losers other than that, was probably, I did lose two overtime games, but the Duke-Iona over, I still don't know how I lost it. I had over 157. There was 94 points at the half. So then I needed 66 in the second half. And I think they scored like 4 points over the final 3 minutes. They missed their final three free throws. They missed like all three shots because Duke brought in like their backups with like 4 minutes to go. And everyone just started missing everything. That was brutal. And it landed 156. I mean, it closed 161. The live total at one point was in the 180s. So I was shocked I didn't get that.
You wrote about that game, right? It was four mooses in one game, I think we were.
No, that was the game. Well, yeah, that was the Kansas Seton Hall game. So that right, shot okay. by Seton Hall covered the first half. I mean, the second half in the game, the under also got moose. There was like 34 points in the last 80 seconds. And then the first half in that game got moose too. But no, this Duke Loyola game was just brutal. I mean, they three bricked free throws in the last 30 seconds, and it just stayed under by a point. So that was probably my worst loss, but you know, I can't really two overtime losses, but I can't really complain too much. Overall, great weekend. What was your worst and best besides Davidson beats for the weekend?
I'm going to say my worst is how much I had put into Michigan State Live yesterday. That was really dumb. And, you know, I know they missed their final 14 shots.
15.
I know the stats about the final 15 shots. I know about the three-pointers, about how that was hit. I'm really disappointed. I never saw Bridges line up on the, you know, on the baseline and try to bust the zone. I felt stupid because they won their first game by 4 points over Bucknell, which was, I mean, Bucknell just, I don't know how they got all those points there at the end. I knew that this was the wrong thing to do, to be laying into Michigan State Live when I don't trust this team whatsoever. I didn't trust them in the Big Ten tournament. Saved myself from losing money there on the first outs. And I still feel just, you know, woke up today with just a little shrug of wanting squarish on my shoulder about them, you know, losing that game and having Syracuse again making a sweet season. I think they were, what, double-digit seed a couple of years ago making it to the Elite Eight? So I felt bad about that. But as far as the good goes.
Final four.
Yeah, Syracuse going Final Four. We all know it. As far as the good goes.
Yeah, it's a double-digit seed a couple years ago.
Oh, I thought it was Elite Eight. Yeah, even they made the Final Four. So, I mean, you know, and they lost to Duke by 16 earlier this year. So you and I will talk about that later this week. But these guys, I don't want nothing to do but going against the Mob. I feel like when I bet on the Orange, I'm betting with the Mob. There's like a group of henchmen somewhere around, and they've got the refs all in their back pocket because I don't know how Syracuse is pulling this shit off. Like, how'd they even get in the tournament in the first place? So the good that's going for me is overall in the tournament, I'm doing something right because I have a bracket that you have over 600 people in your own personal pool that you put out every year. It's a great contest, and I'm in seventh place right now. And if Gonzaga faces Kansas in the end, I'll win your entire thing. So it's great. I did all the math today. I'm in seventh place. And so I'm a big Gonzaga, and I'm a big Kansas fan right now. And if they make it, which is, I don't know, I'm a little worried about Kansas. If they make it, then I'm going to win your pool. And then the other one is I do this sometimes with football, but I'll throw in some parlays and I'll throw in some round robins and I'll buy – if I could buy one team on the money line, like last night, I just knew West Virginia. I felt good about them. I had them covering the spread. I bought their spread down to 11 and then parlayed it with another money line. So I do all this crazy stuff with the things on five dimes just because you can do it. So sometimes I'll buy the key numbers of 5 and 7 when I parlay things together just to get the best of the number if I missed it. Well, it didn't mean much to anybody else, but I had like some parlay out there, and the last piece of it for a 4-digit payout was Ohio State +7. And I don't know who that was, that big guy that just crossed midcourt and hit that three to make it from a 9 to a 6-point game at the very last tenth of a second. That gave me over $1,000 on that one shot that didn't cover the spread for everybody else, but it covered the 7 points that I had parlayed out on five dimes. That shot, I almost hit the floor. That meaningless shot to take Ohio State from 9 to 6 at the end, nobody paid attention to, was everything to me. So that was the good.
That's beautiful. I mean, the Michigan State, I still don't know how they lost. I had them live. Well, I took them. I laid them on the open at -8, closed to -10.5. I took them live, yep. -6.5. I look at the box score and I still don't know how it happened. Syracuse had hit 1 3. They had 3 assists. They were out rebounded by over 20. Michigan State, I think, had 24 more shot attempts. I don't know what Izzo was doing the last 5 minutes. He had Jaren Jackson, excuse me, on the bench. I mean, he's perfect for the middle of the zone. I mean, the dude's fucking so long. He shoots 40. I think he shoots close to 40%. I don't know what he was doing on the bench. I don't know Nick Ward was doing on the bench. I don't know what Izzo was doing. I mean, but bottom line, they just couldn't hit a shot. They went 8 for 38 from three. But they were just doing the same thing. They were trying to do the same things over and over again. And instead of going to the whole Syracuse team is in foul trouble. They play with 7 guys. They have no depth. I don't know. I might be betting against Syracuse again against Duke. I mean, Syracuse cannot play a zone. They have no shooters.
Right.
And Duke's going to do the same thing that Michigan State did. And as far as inside, they're going to dominate. They're going to get Syracuse in foul trouble. And I don't see Duke missing, you know, shooting 20% from three. You know,
that spread to me is just when I read that spread, I'm just thinking that's a double digit spread in a Sweet 16 game. And I think people are going to fall in love with the fact that it's double digits with Syracuse. And I'm going to be on Duke again. And I'm going to be probably pissed at myself if they win again. I'm sorry, if Syracuse wins, I'm probably going to be pissed at myself for fading for Syracuse. But the number just seems way too high. I think It's even higher. If you look at the adjusted EM on KenPom, like the number should be 15. So even at like 11.5, it's still short of what you would, you know, take the KenPom numbers and make a spread on. But it still should feel like way too high of a number for a Sweet 16 team.
Yeah, I mean, Duke beat them 60-44 in Bagley's first game back. I mean, Syracuse scored 44 points. They had 16 at the half. They are not a zone offense. I don't know. I mean, maybe that zone does just weird things in the tournament, and teams just turn into like these. It's just like a voodoo thing. I don't even know what the hell happens. I mean, in that game though, Duke was 2-for-18 from three, and they won by 16.
So let's not throw Michigan State completely under the bus too. Let's spread out the hate for North Carolina, Auburn, and UMBC. Now UMBC, I can understand, but what happened to these teams, especially Auburn? I mean, Auburn, North Carolina, Michigan State, and UMBC, would they go on 10-minute spans without scoring a point unless it came from the free throw line? It was terrible.
Yeah, but I can't really blame UMBC. I mean, they're off one of the most historic wins in the NCAA tournament. They're not a really deep team. Kansas State was just so much more physical than them. But UNC looked horrible. They just got bullied by A&M, and I was happy to see it since I was on A&M. But they got bullied from start to finish. Auburn was bet regret once we start up college football again would be I waited for Butler live and I waited for I wanted to get Clemson live. Well, that never happened because Clemson just stepped on their throat from the start and was up 30 before I even knew it. So I never was able to get Clemson, but Auburn got run out of the gym and Clemson looks really good. That Clemson Kansas game is probably one of the most underrated games. Not a lot of people are like talking about it. Like, oh, I'm excited for this game, but Clemson's playing really good. I mean, they're playing really well. I mean, when you look back at even their game against New Mexico State, they put up 80 on New Mexico State. It's one of the best defenses in the country, and they looked really good at doing so. And then they beat Auburn by 31. Their team's just clicking at the right time. So I think that Clemson-Kansas game, you know, a lot of it's going to come down to does Kansas make a lot of their threes, as it always does. But that's a really good game. And then, I don't know. I mean, I don't think either of those teams has enough to beat Duke, but – if Kansas makes their threes, they can beat anyone in the country. I mean, if they're they're a high volume three-point shooting team. So I mean, if they're on, they can beat anyone.
When is Newman and Vic and Svi? I mean, if they go cold, they're going to be in some trouble. I mean, Clemson is riding the hot hand right now, and they definitely have everybody Kansas is going to face from here on out is going to have a free throw advantage against Kansas. So I'm waiting to see Kansas in this real. A back and forth game and what it's going to be like late when they have to get to the free throw line.
Yeah, I'm still mad that Penn didn't cover, by the way. They should have covered. They're what, up double digits in that game. They go 4-for-14 from the line. And then Kansas like extends late to get outside the number. That was a frustrating loss, but Midwest is actually besides that. I mean, I love all the upsets, but sometimes you miss out on a marquee matchup in this weekend. And I really did want to see Michigan State Duke. But if Michigan State's going to do that, whatever. You don't deserve to be here. You are in Detroit, you know, playing a team that is just shouldn't have been there. And that's the performance that you put up. So sorry, you're out. So I mean, you got Bridges to come back, Jackson. You're in Detroit against a Syracuse team that has no depth and foul trouble, and you just do this. And they were just doing the same things over and over again.
Lost their best scorer. Like what,
fouled out. Yep. And they had no depth anyway. This is a Syracuse team that played on Wednesday, and two of their players, I think, played 40 minutes. I think Howard and Battle played at least 38 minutes. They basically played five guys. I mean, the other two bench players, I think, played like 17 minutes total. So, I mean, and then they had a travel play Friday and then Sunday. And then that Michigan State team can't beat Syracuse. It's an embarrassing loss. I mean, the Midwest, it looks like it's going to be Duke, Kansas, which will be a really good game. But don't cut out Clemson, and you can't cut out Syracuse in the tournament. That's kind of – outside of that Michigan State game, the Midwest is sort of played out as one of the more chalkier. On the right side of the bracket, it's, you know, everything besides Syracuse looks sort of normal. You know, you have Texas Tech and Purdue as the 2-3 matchup. It should be a really good game. It sucks that Haas is out, and it just sets up for Nova even more. I think Nova's biggest test will be against West Virginia. I don't think West Virginia could score enough, but Javon Carter, probably the best defensive point guard in the country, against Jalen Brunson, the best offensive point guard in the country, will be fun to watch. I just don't know if you can press Villanova with, and then their offense just can't score enough, I don't know, consistently to. So if Villanova's off from the outside shooting, West Virginia will have a chance. But that'll still be a fun game. But I ultimately think the game of the tournament that we're going to get is going to be Villanova Duke. That's must see TV. Easter weekend, that game will be an absolute. The way the tournament's going, I'm afraid to even say that's going to happen. But if that does happen,
right,
that will be an awesome game. What do you see on the right side?
Yeah, I want to throw out some props to our good friend Jordan, because he put out an article that made me some money. And if anybody has a subscription, you would have read this and you should have made money too, which was he ranked all the 13 through 15 seeds, which we should tell him next year to include the 16 seeds. He ranked all the 13 to 15 seeds on the most likely chance of an upset. He had Marshall up there number one over Wichita. So, you know, huge props and pat on the back of Jordan, because that was spot on. And you know, Marshall beat Wichita by six, and that was, I think, a plus 775 dog somewhere around there. So, you know, and then West Virginia just came out and blew little brother from the state, you know, away last night. You know, this bracket, I think Texas Tech actually has a shot, because I like Keenan Evans. I like the way they play. They play hounding defense. You know, I think they got a shot against Purdue. And, you know, if we get past that, when's Villanova going to have an off night? You know, I mean, and I know they're the number one adjusted offense in the nation, but I mean, can we keep this up every day? Or are they going to shoot like this? I mean, if they do, they just hand them the title. But what happens when they have an off night against a West Virginia or a Purdue or a Texas Tech? Those are some monster defenses they're about to face before they get to Duke or Kansas.
Yeah, the problem is, Texas Tech also will go through some droughts, but I think Texas Tech is actually going to beat Purdue. It'll be really tight. Mm-hmm. I still got to look into that game, because it's not one of those slam dunk, you know, but I'm starting to lean that way.
Well, with Purdue's big man is out too, and then let's see, the spread opened up 1.5, and
it'll sit right around, you know, there.
Yeah, it's going to sit there for a while.
But the one thing is, if Villanova gets to Duke, Villanova is the number one zone offense in the country. I mean, they have shooters all over. I mean, that's a really good matchup for Nova, you know, compared to other teams, because they can shoot now that Duke plays zone. So I don't know. I mean, that it's the Midwest and the East are where our marquee matchups are going to come from. Before we get back up to the South and the West, we tipped Gonzaga futures, which we hit at 25-1. So those look really good, because I really do like them against Florida State. You knew kind of Xavier was a fraud all year. They're kind of a paper tiger. I mean, they kept winning games by one. Their defense was terrible. So I think Gonzaga beats Florida State. And then the Michigan-Texas A&M game, really, really interesting matchup. Because you have Texas A&M's bigs who are just bullies, and they're playing well now. But Michigan's going to draw them out from the basket. And, you know, how are they going to defend their pick and roll? That's an interesting matchup, that Michigan-Texas A&M. Michigan has to come out and play loose after the way that they won, an absolute prayer after two missed free throws from Houston. But so does A&M. Texas A&M, they're finally putting it all together. They just rolled UNC. That has the potential to be a classic, that game, right down to the wire. But I think I think Gonzaga comes out of this region, and they're going to be in the Final Four playing, at best, the highest seed that they'll play in the Final Four will be Kentucky as a 5, and they'll be favored.
That would be it. That'd just be balls out, Kentucky and Gonzaga in the Final Four. But yeah, I kind of see the same thing. I'm flying to LA on Thursday to go see Gonzaga take on Florida State, and then I'll be around for the first tip off, which is Michigan TAMU Texas A&M. And I think, you know, Texas A&M's bigs and the way that they're running the floor and the way they're shooting right now is going to be really hard for Beeline to stop. But I think it's kind of one of those games where, yeah, I see the spread opened up at 3. It's come down to 2.5. I think it's one of those games where I want to catch Michigan live. Getting points, and I think that's possible if Texas A&M comes out just, you know, balls to the wall, and they get into halftime before they can make coaching adjustments, and you've probably got one of the best coaches in college basketball on Michigan's side. So I think I'm going to hit Michigan maybe 5 minutes before the first half ends if it plays out the way I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with wanting to back Beeline, who's going to have that game is on the 22nd, so that's on Thursday. Yeah. Michigan played Saturday, so they have an extra day of prep. So factor that in. Now, they probably didn't know who they were playing. They might have started prepping for North Carolina, but you're going to get 4 days of preparation with Beilein, who's covered over 70% of his games in the tournament since 2005, one of only two coaches to do so, minimum 10 games. So, I mean, yeah, he's one of the best tournament coaches that's out there. So that's a fascinating matchup. But I ultimately think that if we get a Final Four of Gonzaga, Kentucky, Duke, and Villanova, after all these upsets, it's probably going to be one of the best tournaments of all time. Now, if Loyola Chicago gets there and Texas A&M and Syracuse finagles their way, then all of a sudden it's like all those upsets, we're going to be regretting cheering for them.
You're going to be on baseball so fast if it's a Syracuse Loyola national championship. You'll be back in the bases.
Two 11 seeds. So yeah, but I also really do, my favorite bet, and I already hit it if you follow in the sports action, my favorite bet on this in the Sweet 16 is Loyola Chicago +2, I think it is now, against Nevada. Nevada has been just luck boxing their way. Now they're a relentless team. They're super athletic. They just have a bunch of, like, their whole team's like 6'7". They don't really have anyone big. Loyola Chicago is just a fantastic defense. They can score consistently with Custer the point, but inside too. If everything works inside out and Krutwig inside, they're not going to go through as many droughts as you saw with a Texas. They're also stronger from the line, a Texas and a Cincinnati, which just melted down. I mean, it's amazing. Texas led by 14 in the second half. Cincinnati led by 22, and Nevada won both of those games. I think Loyola Chicago actually matches up well. I make them a favorite in this game.
The number's already moving. We're down to 1.5. And I thought the big knock on Nevada, like, before the tournament, I mean, because they were kind of faltering in the Mountain West Conference, I thought the big knock on them was the fact that they didn't have much depth. So for them to have these comebacks, you know, and to come back the way they did against Cincinnati is – it's pretty impressive. It's hard to count them out, no matter how much.
Yeah, they don't have any depth. That's what makes it crazy. Them and Syracuse, they have no depth. Right. And they play seven guys, but here they are in the second weekend.
You can't fade Sister Jean, though. We're not going to fade Sister Jean.
Well, Sister Jean has Loyola Chicago losing, but, you know, there's some magic.
She does?
Yeah, I think she, in her bracket, she has them losing in the Sweet 16. I want her to keep advancing. I think they do. But I mean, she had Loyola Chicago winning two games. She was probably took a realistic approach, and she probably thought that they would lose to Cincinnati, I guess. I don't know. Not up on the Sister Jean bracket, but I do know that she had them losing.
Now she's flying to Atlanta, and she's in that spaceship of a looking stadium, right? So
So she's, Sister Jean is a national attraction right now. Speaking of like, older women in the bracket, my mom is like leading this huge contest, and I mentioned this on Twitter. She filled out a bracket, gave it to my sister. My sister entered it into this contest, like online. And I mean, it's not like enormous. It's not like thousands and thousands of people, but I think it's like 100 people. And she's number one. I think her bracket would be leading mine. I mean, I think she has her whole Elite Eight left. She has Kentucky. Her only logic was she knows absolutely nothing. This is how you win a bracket.
What was her logic?
Well, she said, we're from outside Philadelphia and suburbs, and so Villanova is a local team. So she wanted Villanova to win it all. So she penciled Villanova through. And then my girl's from Kentucky and a big Kentucky fan. So she put Kentucky in the championship. So Kentucky and Nova, you know, it's a decent start. I don't even have my final is done. My final was Michigan State, Arizona, people. And then she just said, I like the other teams for no good reason. I just like them. That's it. No reason, no rhyme or reason. She said, I just like certain teams over other teams. Literally just let me fill in this, but yeah, I was dying texting with my sister. She was already in first place. And then she had Florida State beating Xavier. Just upset after upset. Texas A&M beating UNC. Just and one of those things where just everything lucky fell into place. That's kind of how you have to even look at the bracket sometimes, especially on a year that's crazy like this. That makes me kind of upset that I follow this all year long. And my mom's final is still alive after one weekend, and mine was gone on Sunday afternoon, both of my teams.
Let me pose this question to you, because I was keeping myself from tweeting during the UMBC run. They were 21.5-point dogs, and Kelly Bryant and Clemson went up to Syracuse and lost after Kelly Bryant, you know, got injured up there, and they beat them as 21.5-point dogs. And I thought to myself, you know, that was a Friday night, and there was kind of a little bit of a hoopla, but nobody would sit there and say, well, this was even a top-10 game of all of 2017 in college football. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, Howard beat UNLV as, I want to say, 43-point dogs. And I can't think of the equivalent in college football of something like this happening. I mean, even you know, Stanford beating USC is 40-point dogs back in the Harbaugh, Pete Carroll game. I can't think of a game in college football that racks up to this. What is the equivalent for the UMBC victory over Virginia on a college football level? Because I can't think of it.
App State.
Yeah, App State. Yeah, you got to go D2, and you got to be a Power Five, a strong Power Five. I think that's exactly
on the road. On the road.
Yeah. Right.
That was the first time I think it ever happened. Like a D1 AA, I think that's what they were called at the time.
Right.
Team went on the road to a powerhouse, like a main program, not just a you know.
But you wouldn't count Arkansas, because in '92 we lost to the Citadel right at home. So that you
yeah, not Arkansas,
that.
Like teams that have won. No, but that was huge. And then the way that it happened, I mean, the crazy thing that it's hard to compare it, because this is just something that's been going on. What 16 seeds were 100, one seeds were 132-0 or something crazy, that it's been going on for so long, and we haven't even seen anything close since the 90s, like really close, like one possession. Like in Princeton, it was in 85 against Georgetown when they lost by one. Then there's a couple other scares. Something went to overtime. But
Arkansas barely beat North Carolina A&T back when we were a one seed going for the title. I got to look that up.
Yeah, but there's been nothing that's been one possession since 2000. So nothing's even been close. And, you know, it was really shocking the way that happened. And I actually started to get what happened. That's insane. Virginia looked like the 16 seed. If you took the names off their jerseys and you watched the game, you thought Virginia was the 16 seed. Like they got ran out of the gym. They didn't. I thought the first 16 seed. And I, by the way, that bet that I mentioned, I won. I gotta still figure out how to contact this person and if I'm gonna do it. But but they never made a run. They did. I mean, it never was close in the second half. It was 21-21 at the half. And then you say, all right, this is interesting. And I'm watching. I'm like, UMBC can win this game. And the problem with Tony Bennett, and he's all class, is he doesn't have any personality, like on the side. Like, you got to fire up your team, because they were just, they kind of were just not nonchalant the whole time. And then they try. I mean, they didn't get fired up, or he was just kind of over there like a deer in the headlights, and so was his team. I never expected that the first 16 seed we would see would beat the number one overall seed by 20 points. And that's what happened. And it was never close. It was in a way, it was almost anticlimactic.
I mean, I had the first half on UMBC and the spread, and I thought that was good enough, because they went into Vermont. Vermont's not an easy place to go and win on the road. I mean, you want a conference championship on the road in Burlington. That's not an easy thing to do. Not a lot of people come out of there with a win. I guess I should have given it more credence, but I think there was so much focus on Penn that there just wasn't another 16 seed worth taking a shot on the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I also think that Virginia has had, over the last 3 or 4 years, they've had a number of injuries right before the tournament, and like they lose a key player. Last year they did. Sometimes someone has been sick. I mean, this has been happening since 2012, even when they weren't like a top seed. And I think losing DeAndre Hunter, it was like, oh, not again. So there was some, like, they were just flat from that. And UMBC just came out and took it. Their senior guards believed from the start, and they didn't let Virginia ever make them nervous. They didn't get within three. They just kept pressing and pushing, which you see a lot of teams will get tight, but Jairus Lyles just kept going and they kept shooting and they kept their foot on the gas, which was huge. But if you watch that game, you thought they scored 53 points in the second half. Virginia gives up 53.4 points per game. They lead the country. And UMBC, a team that scored 39 total points against Albany, put up 53 in the second half in the tournament against Virginia.
Great things. Yeah, you knew that was going to – the Kansas State, you knew that was going to – eventually the lid would be shut on the rim and they would not be able to get anything to go down. I didn't – I thought it happened a lot earlier. It took a while in that second half before that started happening, but –
Yeah, my
like
sentiment.
A horse broke his leg. You got to shoot him. Put him out of his misery.
Yeah, my sentiment like kind of saved me some money there because I thought they were going to get a run out of the gym or they were going to win and there would just be some magical run. And Kansas State, UMBC did end up covering. They barely held on at the end in a horrendous game. It was 50-43 final. I think that if you look at the bracket now, if you're trying to get involved from a futures perspective, hopefully, and I got a lot of notes from people that followed us on last week's podcast and got in on Zaga 25-1, which looks really great now. The two biggest favorites, the two clear favorites from the updated futures are Duke and Villanova, which makes sense. Villanova's plus 375, Duke's plus 390. And then you get on to Kansas and Kentucky are about plus 725. Then Gonzaga at about 8-1. I still think there's value at 8-1 because I think Gonzaga is going to beat Florida State. I think they're getting out of the West, and I ultimately think they're going to the championship again. So,
and all of these teams you're mentioning, like all these teams that are the top favorites within 10-1, only Kentucky and Gonzaga are on, you know, going to play each other. Like, you know, the Dukes and the Villanovas and the Kansases of the world, they've all got to go through each other. As where Gonzaga and Kentucky really just have to beat some very inferior seeds, sans Michigan. We'll see what happens with Texas A&M. But, yeah, I think Gonzaga and Kentucky, those are good numbers because they should be the ones that get to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, the number that I would – the team that I would look at from a futures – just now, if you want to take a shot in a team, I would say Loyola Chicago at 125-1 because I think they win this week. You can start hedging that off, I think. And I think that they'll have a shot against Kentucky. But then also a Texas A&M at 30-1 or a Texas Tech at 23-1. I think those teams both have a good shot of winning their game, their Sweet 16 game this week. And then if they do at those prices, it puts you in a decent spot. Because, I mean, Texas A&M, I think they lose to Gonzaga or Florida State, but Florida State wins. Or Gonzaga has an off night. That's not – Texas A&M can't – it's not like they can't beat Gonzaga. Texas Tech, you get an off night from Nova. So I think that there's some value there. But I would still hit Gonzaga. Now, it sucks to say that because last week we all took 25-1. But I still think that, 8-9-1, there's still some value with the Zags.
No, you're right. I'm putting them into my spreadsheet here. I mean, they should be 1.5-point favorites over Michigan. They would be 3.5 points over Kentucky. And anybody else that would fall into the Elite Eight or Final Four, the spread would be even bigger for Gonzaga. So they're at least going to be a favorite running into the national championship game.
Yeah. There's definite value there. I mean, everyone, Duke shouldn't be, I don't think Duke should be ahead in Kansas and Kentucky. There's just a lot of love for Kentucky. Because their fan base, and they should not be, they shouldn't have better odds than Gonzaga to win it all. Gonzaga would be favored against them. Now they have a slightly, man, they don't even have that much easier. I guess they have an easier. What's your pricing into that? Is they have an easier Elite Eight game because Gonzaga and Kentucky are both 6-point favorites, but Gonzaga is going to have to play either Michigan or Texas A&M, whereas Kentucky is going to have to play Loyola or Nevada. So you do have some of that priced into it.
I don't know. It's interesting because I think Gonzaga's bigs. I mean, the Gonzaga is a very decent rebounding efficiency team, and they can handle Texas A&M's bigs. And as far from a shooting percentage, Gonzaga's fine. I think they can hang with Michigan all day. I don't know. I have to get Jordan in here to tell me if Gonzaga can defend a pick and roll. And if they can, then I mean, walking into the Final Four against a Kentucky team that relies on their length and their isolation play, it feels like Gonzaga is a really good value right now for getting their path to get into the championship game.
I agree. They are my new future squad right now.
Are you Homer Simpson? Are you coming out of the broom? Are you gonna come out of the bush with the jersey on?
I am. I'm coming out with my Zags out of the bush with my Zags jersey. I mean, I said that they had the easiest path from the start, and yeah, that the one is done, the two is done. They were the weakest one and twos because those teams don't play defense, and the one and two in that region didn't make it out. So, yeah, I think that's all I have for today. Like I said, we'll have something else. I don't want to go too long because we're going to try to have something else this week on the Sweet 16. We'll get, you know, a little bit more in the weeds and, you know, get a more detailed look at the Sweet 16 matchups, then start getting into baseball because baseball is going to start while the tournament's going on. So we have to start doing that. So like fantasy draft stuff, season win totals, World Series futures, getting into all that stuff. How bad the Royals are going to suck. How bad the Phillies are going to suck.
Phillies are going to be way better than the Royals. We'll save that for the next
Phillies podcast. Are up and coming. Give them a couple of years. They have some potential, but we'll get into all of that. Mainly, let's just start to – hopefully this helped, you know, kill 1 hour-ish of the time that we have to kill between the last game on Sunday until Thursday. The countdown is on, and we have to wait a little longer because the game started at night. But it should be another couple – 4 days of great basketball. Hopefully we can stay on the right side of these last second shots because there's no greater feeling than covering that way. So hopefully we can keep having a great tournament. Hopefully Zags can get to the Final Four. And hopefully we will catch you later this week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining, Colin. And we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I, somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn